that implies that he did not study conditions 4 and 5. Okay, so now let's call this narrator A, clever name, I know. And his hadith are of the level of hasan. Now suppose we get the same narration from a person over here, narrator B. Narrator B is also at the level of hasan. Okay, so if you looked at the chain like that, you would also conclude that the chain is hasan, right? But now look at the situation. We call it hasan because we had some fear that perhaps the narrator made a mistake, see? But he's an honest person, we know that he would be making mistakes on purpose or he would not be intentionally lying and so forth. So now we have a situation where A statement is supported by B statement. So now we have no reason to doubt or no reason to think that B may have made a slight mistake. So what we do is we raise this hadith from the level of hasan to the level of sahih. But we call it sahih al-ghairihi. Meaning sahih not on its own merit, but sahih with the support of corroborating evidence and corroborating narrative. Okay? Everything's clear so far? No problem? Good. Now suppose some of these conditions are not met. If any one of these five conditions is not met, then the hadith is not considered acceptable on its own and it goes into the big broadcast category, because we don't have time to discuss in detail, of weak hadith. Or dhaif. Okay? And there's like 60 or 70 different types of weak hadith, depending on the perspective. So, if for example the chain is broken, the hadith by itself will become considered weak. If the narrator is not hadith, it will be considered weak. Now, notice now that the defects are different levels, right? Suppose you have a defect in number 3 as opposed to a defect in number 2. Every narrator is dhabit as opposed to every narrator is hadith, or person in the tigre. Which defect would you prefer? You know what I'm getting at? I mean, if you had to have a defect, which defect would you prefer? Okay, you would prefer number 3, why? Okay, because an honest man, a good man, may be correct. But we can never assume that necessarily a dishonest person, or a person who is not adil, is narrating honestly. So basically, and this is again very general, unless the person is really known to make gross mistakes, very bad mistakes, if he's known to make a lot of mistakes, this hadith will be considered weak. But if he's known to have shortcomings in his adala or his integrity, he's not the righteous person, or if he's making gross mistakes, then in fact we'll say, we'll even make this a little bit broader, and we'll call his hadith very weak. And there's even one other category, in fact, that's not even hadith. I mean, technically speaking, there's even one other category where we can prove that the hadith has been fabricated. Okay? This is narrated, for example, by people who are known to fabricate hadith and lies and so forth. And that will put that in the category of its own for fabricated. Now going back to our example here, suppose we have this chain, people from A and above, people from above A, are all people, let's say, of sahih category. But A is lacking in his proficiency. Not slightly lacking, but lacking. What would his hadith be considered? Okay, be considered a weak hadith. Saying that A here, everyone else is a sahih kind of grade, but A is lacking, very much lacking in his proficiency. those hadiths will be considered weak. Now he's adil, he's a person of integrity. We know that he's not a liar. We trust that he would not fabricate hadith or say things improperly in hadith. But we reject his hadith because we know that he makes lots of mistakes. Or other reasons. For example, sometimes someone might be a very good narrator of hadith under some categories, while in other categories he may not have been a very good narrator. For example, some people are good narrators of hadith until they get a little bit old and become a little senile. When they become senile, then they start making more mistakes. So therefore, in their older period, their hadith are not accepted, but in their younger period, their hadith is accepted. Or some people became proficient in hadith. After a long period of study, they became experts. So therefore, let's say like when they were young, they studied under certain scholars of certain areas. And then as they got older and more mature, they were known to study under different scholars and in different areas. So therefore, that person's hadith, in his young period, or in that period where he lived in a certain area, this hadith will be considered unacceptable, while at the same time his hadith under the other circumstances may be acceptable. That's why when you study hadith narrators, and one of the big problems that many people make today, many young people writing in hadith, or young or inexperienced, whatever, you can see this problem occurring, is that sometimes they don't take into consideration the different aspects of a narrator over time. Some of the hadiths are rejected and sometimes they are accepted. Sometimes, for example, they go to some books of narrators where the scholar, the writer of that book, like Ibn Hajar in a book called Taqrib al-Tahdib, he just wants to give you like a one-word or two-word summary of what that person is about. And so he might say about a person that he is taqa, or trustworthy, taqa. What does that mean? Yeah? Okay, that means he's both adil and khalis. If someone is both adil and khalis, then he is called taqwa. So suppose you have a chain like this, you have A, B, C, D, E, and F, okay? So then you go to Taqrib al-Tahdhib, a book in which the person, the scholar Ibn Hajar, is an excellent book, but Ibn Hajar's goal was to give you just a general, one or two words, three words. Yes? No, if he has both of these qualities, he's called Taqwa. If he has both of these qualities. So you could go to like Taqrib al-Tahdhib and find a hadith like this. And you look under A and it says he's taqa, you look under T and it says he's taqa, you look under D and it says he's taqa, E and F. What are you going to conclude? That's not a sahih?
Huh?
Check one? Check one? Okay, let's say, okay, we find one of these things. No, no, no. You cannot do this kind of thing. This is ridiculous. And this is what people do sometimes. Okay? Ibn Hajar is giving you a general statement about the person, but that doesn't mean under all circumstances he's taqwa. You have to go deeper into other books, into much larger books, and study and see is this person taqwa in general, or is he taqwa in some cases and not in all cases. Ibn Hajar doesn't always point that out in the Taqrib al-Tahdhib. So you have to go to the more, and the larger works that discuss the narrator in detail. And you cannot just go to this work and say, oh, look, they're all taqwa, chains unbroken and things, and therefore it's a hadith. That's not like Taqrib al-Tahdhib. Yeah. In fact,
maybe that's why he's moved that way.
Yeah, it's very
important.
Can you jump forward on the other side again?
Yeah.
Okay. This is a footnote. You know my footnotes. You all should be familiar with them. We'll come back to the side. Huh? Just flip it over. But it's rough down here. I know I'm not an engineer, but I figured that one out. No, it's not like an engineer. Yes, it's lost over there. I know it's lost over there. See, that side used to be over here. leaning forward, this is called. Okay, just a second. Hold on to your question. And this is the reason I'm getting into this, because this is also going to talk about some other issues also. There's a famous scholar of hadith, his name is Al-Maqdisi. Al-Maqdisi wanted to compile a book, a biographical dictionary, of narrative. And he called this book Al-Kamal. How would you translate Al-Kamal? Let's say the complete work or something in that nature. Now what he did, what he did is now he had to choose what narrators to put in this book, right? I mean, he didn't say, I'm going to take everyone. So what he did is he chose six books, and he said, everyone in those six books, I'm going to put them in this book. So he chose Sahih Bukhari. He chose Sahih Muslim. Any guesses on what else he chose?
Abu Dawud.
He chose Sunan Abu Dawud. You can see that I work with these names a lot. Sunan Abu Dawud, Sunan Al-Tirmidhi, and Sunan Al-Nasa'i, and Sunan Ibn Majah. Now, this book by Al-Maqdisi became so famous and was so important for the scholars of hadith at that time that these six books began to be referred to as the six books. And in some areas, like in the Indo-Pak subcontinent, they refer to it as what? Okay? As the six authentic works. Okay, this was just, you can almost call it, not a good phrase to use, but you can almost call it a freak of history. He chose these six books because they're famous and good works, but it does not mean by any means whatsoever that all of the hadith in these books are authentic. When you give it the name, the six authentic works, some people begin to think that that means that all of the hadith in those books are authentic. No. Okay? It's just something that happens. The scholar chose those six books. Those six books, because of the importance of his work, begin to be known as the six books. And as the stature grew, as their fame grew, they begin to be known as the six authentic works. No. Not at all. And you would never hear a real scholar of hadith referring to them as the six authentic books. Never. Okay? So, now this book, Al-Kamal, is very big and contains lots of information about each narrative. Almost as much information as the Muqtasi could find. Now, some of that information, some scholars of hadith may say, well, it's not that important. No, he will mention when the scholar was born, where he lived, who were his students, where did he travel, who did he learn from, where did he travel to, who were her students, what did he compile, and then he'll give many, many hadiths from that scholar and so forth. This hadith goes from him, this hadith goes from him, and so forth. Okay? Lots of information. But it was much too big. Unfortunately, they didn't have CD-ROMs back then. So, later scholars, and I didn't bring anything with me. I don't remember this side of the family very well, for the time being. But another scholar, later scholar, his name is Al-Mizzi, came along in a prison. And a book called Tahzib al-Kamal. Tahzib al-Kamal is published nowadays. We have it available. This is still in manuscript form. Tahzib al-Kamal is 35 volumes, so you can imagine how big al-Kamal is. Now, Al-Mizzi. The first one is Al-Mukhtar. Yeah? Yeah. Is this scene or clause? Not what I wrote, but it should be. That's the question. Okay, so his, what we call in English, his son-in-law. This is his son-in-law. So he wrote Tahzib al-Kamal, which, as I said, it's 35 volumes, and when inshallah Sheikh al-Adami publishes his CD-ROM, this is already all on his CD-ROM, the whole book. Okay? But it also contains lots of information. which some later scholars thought, well, maybe contains too much information. So, for example, if a guy just came along and said, we should have preached this, and he preached it, what was the name of the work? Tahdhib al-Tahdhib. Ibn Hajj. Okay, basically the abridgment of the abridgment. Okay? Now this work is published in 11 volumes. So we went from 1135 to who knows however big that would be if they were to publish it nowadays. So he took out a lot of information. Basically, in Tahdhib al-Kamal you can still find a long list of the scholars, teachers and students. He basically narrowed it down to the major. This is published, but unfortunately the published edition is very bad. Lots of mistakes. Lots of mistakes. This published edition is excellent. But this one, unfortunately, is very bad. Now, he also had the idea, the same as in Hajj now. He had the idea because over here on this other side, which I said, I don't remember the exact what was going through it, but Zahabi, one scholar named Zahabi, had abridged this down to basically a small book where you have the name of the narrator and which in which generation he came from and what books you can find him in and whether or not he's authentic or not. Sometimes even less information from that. So what Hajj said was, well, Zahabi's work has too little information, so I'm going to come out with a simple one like that, which is like, you can almost call it like a phone book, name, address, and phone number, that's basically all he gives. And he calls it Taqrib al-Tahdhib. And this one has been published in 2 volumes. It's also a terrible edition. Many, many mistakes. It's been published also in 1 volume, a much better edition. Basically, all the narrators, the main narrators, that are found in this book are found here and are found here and are found here. Same narrators, but the information about the narrators is being reduced every time. So he's not giving you any specific information that you really need, that if you're a scholar of hadith and you want to make a study of hadith and you want to know if his narratives are acceptable, to turn to this book and simply rely on this book makes no sense whatsoever. But unfortunately, sometimes people do it. And, Well, I mean, you can start from that book, okay, and start from that book to give you a general idea of who are the narrators and whether or not in general they're authentic and so forth. But then if you really want to go into more detail and find out more about them, you can understand it. You'd have to go to this book, even better. Yeah, but even then you'd best not be, unless he says that he's a fabricator. Okay, well, he's a fabricator. You're not going to say sometimes he didn't fabricate, so no, he's a fabricator. Please. Why did I get into all that? Oh, sorry, that's a good one. Let's go back to the sixth now. Okay, so we're setting this chain. We went to Taqrib al-Tahdhib, and we found that they're all, we went to Tahdhib al-Tahdhib, and we found, for example, that A here, all the everybody above A are authentic narrators, but A here is slightly weak. He's weak not because of his integrity or his adala, but he's weak because he is not very proficient. Okay? He's not proficient. He's not slightly lacking proficiency, but he is not proficient. But he's an honest person, but he's not proficient, so therefore we call his hadith weak. Alright? But then, like before, we might have another narrator who's similar to A, who narrates the same thing and supports A's narration. So now, we had a fear about him making some mistake, and this can possibly remove the possibility of a mistake. So we'll raise that hadith from being weak to being hasan. Only like we talked about before, it will be hasan li'ghayrihi. Hasan not on its own merits, but hasan because of supporting evidence. Well, we're actually supposed to finish in 2 minutes or so. these are the basics when we talk about Sahih and Hassan. As I said, I wanted to make sure that at least now when you say, is this Hadith Sahih, or you ask about one of the Hadith Sahih, or you hear that the scholars say that this Hadith is Sahih or Hassan, at least you have an idea of what it is that they're talking about. And that it meets certain conditions. Yeah. Well, he told me not to sit with him. So we have to, of course, stop here or sometime. Is there any question right now about these concepts that we discussed? Yes. Yeah, if someone is known to have a weak memory, yeah, he will be in the weak category, and if he's known to have a real weak memory, he will be even very weak. But if he makes one, what? Oh, okay. If a hadith is considered sahih or hasan, those are the only kind of hadith that are acceptable in matters of aqidah, in matters of sharia, and so forth. Now, if a hadith is narrated or is graded as weak, there's some difference of opinion about how and when can you use that weak hadith. Some say you can use it, and they give some conditions for it. But the strongest opinion among the scholars of hadith, and the vast majority of the scholars of hadith, say if a hadith is weak, if the hadith is weak, this means the preponderance of the evidence is showing us that the Prophet ﷺ did not make this statement in the way that it has been narrated. So therefore they say that you should not use it, neither in aqidah or sharia, or in matters of encouraging people to do good deeds, or intimidating them away from evil deeds. And all of them agree that if you ever narrate a weak hadith and you know it is weak, it is obligatory upon you to point out that it is weak. Or you have to narrate it in such a way, and unfortunately nowadays probably this condition, we shouldn't accept this condition anymore. Among the scholars of hadith, there used to be certain ways that you could narrate a hadith that would show to the people that you considered a weak hadith. For example, instead of saying the Prophet ﷺ said and said, you would say that it has been narrated that the Prophet ﷺ narrated. And you would use something they call Sigat al-Tamrid instead of Sigat al-Jizm. But nowadays, if a khatib, for example, said that it has been narrated that the Prophet ﷺ said that, then even he's applying that condition, I'm sure none of half the people in the audience, you just say, oh, that's a hadith. And so in other words, that condition may be valid among the scholars of hadith, but it doesn't work in general. Yeah. Yes. The works of Al-Bukhari and Muslim, these are two works of hadith in which the scholar of hadith who compiled that book said that all of the hadith in that work are authentic hadith. Okay? With some minor exceptions in the case of Al-Bukhari, which we cannot go into right now. But let us just say for the time being, it's enough to know that the scholar of hadith Al-Bukhari is saying that all the hadith in this book are sahih. All of the Muslim hadith are sahih. Well, Imam Muslim also said that all of the hadith is compiled are sahih. Now, Abu Dawud, Tirmidhi, and Nasai, and Ibn Majah, and the others that are well known, Ahmed, for example, they did not make such claims for their work. In fact, after many hadith, they pointed out the effect of this hadith and so forth. So, therefore, you cannot assume if a hadith is in Sunan Abu Dawud, you cannot assume that it's authentic. You cannot even assume that it's authentic in Abu Dawud's opinion. And you cannot, and this is debatable issue among the scholars of hadith, but even if Abu Dawud is silent about the hadith, you cannot assume that it is hasan, that it is accessible. Okay. You can assume it is salah, which means something else. Okay. Okay, I'm getting there. People are never patient with me, I don't know what to do. So, a scholar of hadith named Al-Baghawi decided to make a collection of hadith for the general people. So what he did is he collected hadith and he put them into two categories. He collected hadith according to fiqh topics and he put them into two, not chapters, but let's say subchapters, okay? He called this book Mishkat al-Din. In the first section, that's what it is, section. In the first section, he only included hadith from Al-Bukhari and Muslim. So those hadith are all sahih. In the second section, he included hadith from the other works. And unfortunately, he called those hadith hasan, but that has no meaning whatsoever. It might be weak hadith as well. Now, a later scholar, his name is Tabrizi, came along. He liked the Baghawi's work, but he decided to add something to it. So we went from Mishkat al-Sunnah to Mishkat al-Masabih. He added a third section to it. So now the first section, if you look at the Mishkat al-Masabih, the first section only includes hadith from Al-Bukhari and Muslim. Those are all authentic. The second section includes hadith from those other books like Abu Dawud and Nasa'i and so forth. You cannot assume automatically that they're authentic, although the vast majority of them are. The third section he added were hadith related to the same topic that he took, sometimes from Al-Bukhari, sometimes from Muslim, sometimes from other works. So again, if it's from Al-Bukhari Muslim, you know it is authentic. If it's from the other works, you cannot necessarily assume they're authentic, although, as I said, the vast majority of them are authentic. Yeah.
So there was one sister who had a question.
Please. It's almost a political question. We don't deal with death. The question says, what, if any, are the faults in the hadith in which the Prophet ﷺ said that all that a woman may show are her hands and face? Please give proof, explain. I don't have all my notes with me, but basically this is the hadith of Asma, in which the Prophet ﷺ told Asma that when a woman reaches the age of menstruation, then nothing should be seen of her except for her hands and face. This hadith has been narrated on the authority of Aisha, and it has been recorded by Abu Dawud. The one who narrated from Aisha, his name is Durek, he never met Aisha, so the chain is broken. And also one of the later narrators is also weak. Now, one particular scholar, famous scholar, perhaps the greatest scholar of hadith alive today, his name is Sheikh Muhammad Nasruddin al-Albani. He studied this hadith and he said, yes, this hadith, this chain by itself is weak, but then he found some supporting evidence for it. Remember how we said that you might have a weak hadith, but if it's supported by other narrations, you will raise it to the degree of hasan. So he found two other supporting evidence for it, and he concluded that it is hasan. But if a hadith is very weak and has major defects, then you cannot raise it. Okay? That's the principle, that if it has major defects, you cannot raise it. It's, in other words, three or four very weak hadith, all narrated by people who have no adala or no integrity whatsoever, will not become almost a hasan of sahih. Well, I studied in detail his argument, and I cannot see how he raised that hadith whatsoever. I studied all the narrated, and in fact, he did. And unfortunately, for example, in one of the other chains, there's a narrator called Abdullah ibn Lahiya, who is well known among the scholars of hadith. His books were burnt, and after his books were burnt, he narrated. And as we said, ikhtilat is not allowed, especially not in hadith. And he used to mix hadith together, and he made lots of mistakes in hadith. But even before his books were burnt, he is considered by many scholars a weak narrator, even before his books were burnt. Well, Al-Albani, in discussing these particular hadith to support this particular chain, he only brings the good narrations about Ibn Lahiyah, and he does not mention, as he mentions in other books like Sahihat Hadith Sahihah, Da'ifah, his other books, he does not point out that in fact Ibn Lahiyah is in general a weak narrator, especially when he narrates in the form of Ma'anan, which is the hadith form that he used in that particular supporting evidence. So the other two hadith that he uses to support the hadith of Asma have major defects, and they cannot be used to support that hadith. So as I said, I have an example of a detailed discussion of the hadith about whether or not women, wives are able to allow to spend their money without the permission of their husband. And this is the latest issue of Al-Bashir. If anyone wants a copy of it, he may come up. I don't have copies for everyone. So if you're not interested, don't take a copy. Preferably English speaking, brother. Not yet taken.
The time is about up. We've got time for just a couple more, maybe just two or three, just a couple more minutes. Brother?
I wanted to ask you, what is the level of the four other books that are Bukhari and Muslim?
And the four Sunan?
And the Misnad of Ahmed Ibn Hanbal.
The
level, you know.
Well, for example, An-Nasai is an excellent book of hadith, excellent collection. The vast majority of the hadith in An-Nasai are authentic hadith, Sahih al-Hasan. Abu Dawud also is very good. Many times if there's a defect in the hadith, he will point it out himself, so you have his comments. Not always though, but it's also a good collection of hadith. It contains, unfortunately, a number of weak hadith, a number of very weak hadith, and rarely, now and then, even hadith which some scholars consider fabricated. Tirmidhi also is good in general. The majority of the hadith are authentic. A problem with Tirmidhi is Tirmidhi also many times he used to comment after the hadith. He would say, for example, this hadith of Hasan Sahih or this hadith of Hasan Gharib and so forth. In general, the terminology fairly much agrees with what we said, but one of the big problems with there's two big problems with the Tirmidhi. Number one, he was a little bit lax in grading hadith of Hasan. Okay? In other words, other scholars would not say this hadith of Hasan, the Tirmidhi would call it Hasan. An even bigger problem with the Tirmidhi, that even in Nawawi pointed out in Al-Muhaddith Sharh Majmu', which is written a long time ago, is that the Tirmidhi had many students like Al-Bukhari and so forth. Unfortunately, the manuscripts that we have that they had at that time, dating back even to the times of Tirmidhi and so forth, unfortunately, different manuscripts have different statements after the hadith. One will say this is Hasan, the other one will say it's Hasan Sahih, the other one will say Hasan Gharib. And so therefore, those statements also are not reliable from that point of view. Unfortunately, the published editions, even in Arabic, did not really take that into consideration. They just took any one of the maqsufat, any one of the unpublished, and just put whatever it stated without pointing out the other differences. But in general, this is a good work. Probably the weakest or the one that has the most problem with it of those four, the four Sunan, is Sunan Ibn Majah. Well, also the Musnad of Imam Ahmed is an excellent work, but it is a little bit difficult for people like us to deal with sometimes because he did not make as many comments after the hadith as Abu Dawud did, as the Tirmidhi did, and also it is much larger than all the other works.
How many hadiths?
There's quite a bit of difference. Actually, by the way, Musnad Ahmad was mostly done, compiled in its final form by actually the son of Imam Ahmad, Abdullah. It was either Salah Abdullah. I forget which one did the most work on the Muslim. And also added some of his own. Abdullah. I'm sorry, it was Abdullah. Also added some hadith known as the additional hadith from Abdullah, from the son of Imam Ahmad. You have to distinguish between the hadith that his son added and the hadith that was from the original work because the quality of the hadith that his son added are not of the same quality as the hadith of the original work.
Okay, this is the last question of Brother Musa, inshallah. And brothers, you know, the brother is pretty flexible. The ship is pretty flexible, inshallah. It's time to eat now. So
it's time to eat.
Brother Musa's question, and that's it, inshallah.
Yeah.
But the work that is available in English, as far as I know, what you're referring to is not Sunan al-Tirmidhi. It is not an abridged edition of Tirmidhi. It is another book called Ash-Shama'il, or a book about the characteristics of the Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wasallam. It is a decent work, but also contains many weak hadith, especially with hadith of that nature. Sometimes some scholars of hadith were not as careful. I mean, the Prophet ﷺ had this many gray hairs, the Prophet ﷺ walked in this nature, the Prophet ﷺ, since they're not that much related to Sharia, sometimes they were not as careful. So therefore you'll find lots of weak hadith even in that collection. The other question you asked, as I mentioned, if depending on the weakness in the hadith, depending on the weakness of the hadith can be raised to the level of hasan. If it's a weak hadith and then supported by other hadith that have slight weakness, or narrations that have a slight weakness, it can be supported by each other and move to the level of hasan. I'm not sure exactly what you're getting to in your question. Maybe we can discuss it back in Boulder.
I have an istisna, inshallah. Subhanaka Allahumma, wa bihamdik, wa ashhadu an la ilaha illa anta, astaghfiruka wa atubu ilayk. Jazakallah khair, Shaykh, for the illuminating lecture, inshallah. We turn you over to our brother Muhammad now, inshallah.